Now it's my turn. Our gospel reading, this resurrection story this morning, comes to us from Luke 24, starting at verse 13. Hear God's word for us this day. Now on that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place in these days?" Jesus asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him." Then Jesus said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?" Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all of the scriptures. As they came near the village to which they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with him, he took bread, blessed and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" That same hour, those two got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, "The Lord is risen indeed. He has appeared to Simon." Then they told what had happened on the road and how Jesus had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, here's the truth. No one expected a resurrection. That just wasn't in the cards. A new king, perhaps, or some power in the government, but no one expected the Messiah's tale to go down like it did. Sure, there are many, many books in the Hebrew scriptures about what the anointed one of Israel would come to do. Restore a nation, bring justice to the oppressed people, right all the wrongs of the Roman Empire and every other empire that had a hand in locating Israel down at the bottom. But the expectations were wrong. And these expectations made it impossible for those two followers of Jesus in this resurrection story to see Jesus walking among them on the road to Emmaus. Expectations. We all have them because they simply are a part of being human. You save files on your computer because you expect you will need them again and will want to know where to find them. If you make dinner for your spouse or a partner, you expect them to appreciate it. As you get older, we expect that we physically will not be able to do as much as when we were younger. If I'm up later than normal, I expect that I will be more tired later. As a parent, I expect my kids to do the chores I have listed for them on the refrigerator for this week. Right? Expectations abound, right? And they aren't bad. They are a normal part of human existence. And while important because they allow us to create a sense of order and stability in the world around us, it's important to also know that those expectations we have influence then our perceptions and how we experience the world. An article from MIT written in 2019 cites, "For decades, research has shown that our perception of the world is influenced by our expectations. These expectations, also called prior beliefs, help us make sense of what we are perceiving in the present, based on similar past experiences. Consider, for instance, how a shadow on a patient's X-ray image, easily missed by a less experienced intern, jumps out at a seasoned physician. The physician's prior experience helps her arrive at the most probable interpretation of the shadow." Our expectations, or what researchers call prior beliefs, impact how we understand this world, and it touches all aspects of our lived experiences, our expectations of our family, of our work lives, our understanding of how the world should work. It influences how we perceive things ought to be. However, this is my point, conversely, when there are not prior beliefs or expectations about particular encounters, we create expectations that may or may not be true so we can understand and make sense of what's happening. Those travelers on the road didn't expect a resurrection. So when a resurrected Jesus was with them, they literally could not see that it was Jesus. They felt it when their hearts burned, right, as Jesus shared from the scriptures how the Messiah had to suffer to fulfill, but they still couldn't see him. We all hold certain beliefs or expectations about God and how God moves in the world based on prior experiences, knowledge, expectations of others that have become our own. So what do we expect from God, from Jesus this day on one of the most important days to Christians? Are we merely here to remember and to celebrate some cerebral truism or theological platitude like life after death for those who believe or judgment incurred for lack of that same belief? Or was Jesus here for more than that? And could this text possibly be reminding us that Jesus, in the power of the Spirit, is still here for more than just that? I think we are much, much like those two people journeying on the road to Emmaus. Even though they knew the tomb was empty, right? The text tells us that they still are sad. Jesus was not the leader they expected. And instead of being excited that Jesus wasn't in the tomb, whatever it meant, they were wallowing in the failed expectations of a Messiah to save them from the Roman Empire, to rebuild the people of Israel into something powerful again. And just like Jesus didn't meet their expectations, our expectations of what this resurrection signifies won't meet all of our diverse expectations either. It doesn't fit into the God box that each of us have created for ourselves. God and this world, the universe that God has created, is too big to fit our often trivial and always broken human expectations. Jesus blows wide open, the idea that what we know and experience is enough to make sense of all of the things of God and God's activity in the world. Instead, perhaps the God that we know in Jesus Christ and the world he's created and redeemed is big enough for all of us. And trying to pinpoint who and what and where Jesus means and what he means for our lives is more than just words and beliefs. It demands curiosity, questions, journeying on the road, leading us to encounters with the living Christ. So instead this morning of reflecting on the power of the resurrection and our expectations of what that signifies in a static theological sense, I want to focus on how much we are like those disciples, journeying down a hot and dusty road, and like them, we all have closed our eyes to this very trying, uncertain time in the history of our country, our economy, our world, and even our own Christian tradition, where everyone seems to be grasping for understanding with their prior beliefs of what will happen with this and that and whose fault it all is. Our expectations, like those early followers, are not able to logically comprehend who Jesus is and the power of the gospel in the world. We can argue about those things all day. However, we can also experience the resurrection among us today if we possibly can begin to let go of our limited expectations and open ourselves to the wideness of God's compassion and activity here and now. We have allowed the expectations of what we want from a God to cloud our vision of what really happens when Jesus shows up. In this resurrection story, it was listening to the words of Jesus as they journeyed down that road when their hearts burned within them. And they knew what he was sharing meant something. But it was not until they broke the bread, when they gathered, when Jesus blessed the bread and shared it. They couldn't see who he was until they broke bread together. It wasn't some orthodoxy or exact equation that we have solved in our head of how this mystery of resurrection occurs. No, it was in the practice, the truth, wordless though those feelings of gathering and breaking bread were, where Jesus and the power of overcoming death was revealed to them. I'm not saying we can't have theological truths to guide and frame our lives, but perhaps in churches like ours, where diversity of thought, lifestyles, and practice of faith run the gamut, our witness to the world about this gospel is the very fact that we exist to say that Jesus is the one that holds us all together. And the power of the resurrection guarantees it to us every time we gather around this table and break bread. Resurrection invites us to love, a love that knows no bounds, even for those we usually exclude. Resurrection invites us to gather with others, to break bread, and to celebrate God's goodness, even among those you could never imagine eating with. Resurrection challenges our expectations of certainty because it reveals that mystery still abounds. Resurrection teaches us to faithfully walk down the road we are on and find Jesus when we gather with friends and strangers, overturning our well-thought-out ideals and inviting us into something new, into community and the family of God, where siblings in Christ may have nothing in common other than followers of Jesus. After 2,000 years, Resurrection still invites us to see God revealed to us when we gather around this table. How Jesus is present is still a mystery. Sure, religious leaders and theologians have been writing for centuries, developing theological positions on whether Jesus is in the bread, under the bread, just spiritually present, or simply present in the fact that we remember. But we do have the command that Jesus gave on his last night with the disciples and see him again the first thing after the resurrection, breaking bread at a meal with his disciples. That is where the risen Christ is revealed. We are still on that same road those two disciples in the story were on, still fulfilling the word on the road that was shared with those disciples that day, to accompany Abraham and Moses, David and Esther, Ezra and Nehemiah, Matthew, Mark and Luke, Paul and Timothy, Priscilla and Aquila. We are here to live the faith, knowing that God is among us in the burning of our hearts when we hear the stories of God's people over millennium, seeking to follow and then to be fortified when our eyes are opened and we know with all of our being that Jesus is among us. Let us gather around this meal today. Let go of prior beliefs. For a moment, let all of our generalized expectations of what is supposed to happen, for maybe, just maybe, our eyes will be opened and we will see the resurrected Christ among us. Thanks be to God.